Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Their defense. But the other part of this, guys, I just think the AFC East has gotten a lot better in the last couple of years. And that's one thing that I didn't see Brian Flores being this good with so little down in Miami. I expect them to take a big leap forward. I still don't like the New York Jets, but Buffalo seems to be real buttoned up. So I still see them as a 9-10 win team. Can they win the division? Absolutely. Can they make damage in the AFC? Absolutely. It's matchup dependent, but this does not make them the favorite by any stretch.
I think Belichick is not going to change what he believes in at his core. I think he's going to make Newton change. And I think Newton will be amenable to a lot of that. A, because he's 31, and I don't think he's that keen on becoming, you know, quarterback / fullback anymore. And the other thing is, he's not in a position where he can complain about the way the offense is running, because that one he loses on day one. I think this is
sports history.
Yeah, UCLA. UCLA during the 70s and 60s? Aren't they the most decorated cheaters of all time?
Kentucky basketball. You want some cheating? The best cheater in sports is the one that we don't know about still. That outfit is the best cheater. Like, if I told you that Bruce Bochy had the same trash can system and brought the Giants to three World Series, and then the guy rode off into the sunset, you never heard from him again, that's the greatest cheater in sports, not the team that got caught and made fun of and all that. I will say this, though. The Patriots, when it comes to being handcuffed with penalties, they're a master at avoiding the damaged cause by the loss of draft picks. Now, maybe it catches up with them, but nobody will remember them as cheaters. They're going to go down in history as champs with a cheating footnote, side note. It's the sidecar, but it's never going to be riding on the motorcycle. That is how dominant they really were. And I just, how about this? So let's say Cam Newton leaves after this season. That'll give the Patriots a compensatory third-round draft pick, and it just so happens that the videotaping incident cost them a third-round draft pick. So, I mean, like, they get away with murder even when you catch them murdering people. That's to be respected.
They quote get away with murder, end quote, because they know that the National Football League is A, not that interested in chasing them down, and B, that they can't do enough without risking an owner revolt. I mean, what have they lost in all the times that they've been caught?
Four games from Tom Brady. That's it.
And they won three of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
and the Super Bowl that year.
Basically, yes. What the Patriot way is a lot of things, but one of them is go ahead and catch us. You're not going to do enough to us to make this not worth our while. And there have been more egregious cheaters over the years. I think the Oakland Raiders in the 60s and 70s with Al Davis were notorious for a lot of things, but they didn't mind it either because they wanted it in your head. And a lot of coaches did put it in their heads, and it was one of the advantages they had. I think the Patriots just don't care whether you know or not.
So we're going to have to shrink. We're still going to do it. But we're going to have to shrink our Ask the Butcher segment to the back end of this segment because we've got two breaking stories that, of course, are happening in our last hour with no show tomorrow. But this is worth talking about. Number one. Pro Football Talk is reporting that Clemson and the South Carolina Gamecocks may have to practice and play in a state other than their own, South Carolina, this coming season. Okay, lot to talk about, moving pieces, probably won't happen, but we're seeing concern now start to take over the conversation of college football in the South, which is the last place you'd think you'd see it. How about this one? Investors and shareholders worth a combined $620 billion are calling on Nike, FedEx, and Pepsi to sever ties with the Washington Redskins unless the team changes its name. This is according to a report by Adweek. Ooh. I mean, you weren't going to change the Mississippi State flag until you pulled all that business out of Mississippi. If you're going to get Daniel Snyder's attention. Oh, I also saw that he was petitioning D.C. to use the site of RFK as a new stadium because he wants another new stadium. And they said, you can go pound sand. You're not doing a lick of business inside the District of Columbia with that name attached to your team. What a day for Daniel Snyder all of a sudden here, Ray. He's one of your favorites.
He's outstanding on every level. The FedEx connection is particularly noteworthy because that's the name put on their current stadium. Right. And the president of FedEx, a guy named Fred Smith, who's based out in Tennessee, they've already asked Daniel Snyder, will you please change the name? And I suspect it's as a first step toward, if you don't, we're pulling our money out of there. And Fred Smith is also a minority owner of the team. So now the fires around Daniel Snyder are growing hotter. But in response, Daniel Snyder has always been the guy who says, you can't tell me what to do. I'm independently wealthy. And I will resist any attempt you make to tell me what to do, even though you might be doing it for my own best interests. So this is going to be a question of how much more money weighs than arrogance, more than almost any other team in any other situation, because Daniel Snyder has backed his play on keeping the team's name for forever, and he would have to back down and eat metric tons of crow if that were to happen. So I think it is maybe the most fascinating story of the day.
What he doesn't realize is that crow would definitely be served by the laughing at you internet crowd. And when that crow was done being eaten, flew by, the feathers were, you know, merely just a memory in the corner of your mouth, he'd be hailed as a freaking hero. He finally got it. He finally came around. Thank you, Dan. Thanks, Danny. Thanks, pal. America would be so quick to kiss his rear end for making the right decision, having resisted it for so long, they would still come around. The pendulum would be, isn't that good? And then you'd still have your angry that it changed it all. I'm upset that you tore down the Confederate statue anyways. That crowd is still going to be there no matter what. But that crowd doesn't matter anymore. You don't have to worry about them anymore. They're marginalized. They suck, and we all know it.
Why don't they just call the team the Senators? I mean, the name is just sitting there for them to take. They can be whatever, the Americans, they can pick whatever name they want.
The Monuments?
Anything but Redskins, right? I mean, anything but a racial slur. I mean, it's at the point now where I don't even know what he's doing. He's killing his own brand, really, is what he's doing. Alienating his own fan base.
In every way. I mean, he's killed his brand on field. He's killed his brand off field. And the one thing that might get his attention, Ray, is he doesn't have the kind of money that's going to buy him a plot of land in D.C. So he finally needs a favor from where he wants to return. And when you need a favor, all of a sudden you might have to jump through a hoop that you'd rather not jump through. And that's the only thing that might have his full attention on this one. If he says screw everybody, I mean, you almost it gets to the point where you almost have to respect it.
Where's
okay,
Roger
buddy.
Goodell? Where's flames. Roger Goodell here, though, guys? Wait a minute. In the NBA, they took away what's-his-face's team, Donald Sterling. I mean, why can't the NFL step in and say, look, you got to change the name or we're going to rescind your ownership or we're going to force you to sell? Like, I'm legitimately curious why they could not do that.
Okay, one, the commissioner didn't do that to Donald Sterling. His fellow owners did that. Because he was costing them money. Daniel Snyder has yet to cost anybody else in the NFL a dime, which is why the other owners don't care. In fact, they rather like the fact that nobody can compel an owner to do something he doesn't want to do, because they don't want that precedent coming back and biting them in the ass. And Roger Goodell is like every other commissioner. He works for them, not the other way around. Daniel Snyder doesn't even have to take his calls if he doesn't want to.
You don't think the other teams Goodell's in the league are hurt by this, right? You legitimately don't think that?
Where have they lost money because Washington keeps a racial slur as their nickname?
I mean, it's one thing to say you can't prove what you don't know, but if they could come up with a metric that shows, hey, we made X amount of dollars with this racial slur, if we drop that, we'd make even a little bit more. Like, the minute that they can prove that and show it to them, you'll have other owners start turning on them. This is where the whole Colin Kaepernick thing never quite, I never understood. In a pursuit of money, Colin Kaepernick would have the biggest selling jersey in football history over the course of one season if all of a sudden the Los Angeles Chargers were selling number 7 Colin Kaepernick jerseys. We all know that. The Chargers know that. The other owners know that. So why aren't they doing it?
I mean, it's money.
If money trumps all, it should even trump not liking Kaepernick.
Because when they basically shut off his avenue to a job 3 years ago, they did it basically because Trump worked them over and they were afraid of Trump.
Yes.
But no one's afraid of him anymore.
That dynamic has changed.
Big time.
But without knowing exactly what legal liability the owners would face for suddenly admitting, oh, yeah, we'd like him back now. I mean, and not necessarily from Kaepernick, but from other groups. I'm not sure, because I'm not a lawyer, what sort of legal backtracking they would have to do, because questions would be asked. And at some point, one of those billionaire blockheads would do what Rob Manfred did today and say, oh, yeah, we were never actually going to, you know, go beyond 60 games, thereby putting their settlement in jeopardy, because it's almost de facto proof that they didn't negotiate in good faith. So that's the part that I don't know. But I think in terms of Washington, the owners aren't that bothered by it. And in terms of Kaepernick, I think they are, and they don't all want to look like somebody's going to ask questions about how we colluded to keep him out. And that's going to cost us treble damages that have not yet been calculated.
Yeah, unquantifiable.
Well, the last thing we throw on the grill today with breaking news is that right now, I'll share it with you one more time, according to Adweek, investors and shareholders worth a combined $620 billion are calling on Nike, FedEx, and PepsiCo to sever ties with the Washington Redskins unless the team changes its name. Well, well, well. Speaking of throwing things on the grill, this is where Joe comes in.
Welcome to Good Burger, home of the Good Burger. Can I take your order?
This is a tasty burger.
Yeah, just keep it coming, please.
Let me just sit here and enjoy the one thing that makes me a little bit happy. This fresh, delicious, tasty, meaty, turkey-filled, cold-cut combo.
Will somebody get your kid a Happy Meal?
Hey, come and get your Brahma cuts. It's the time to ask you butcher with the Joe Shasky on 957 The Game.
Ray. That's fantastic. That's
Ray, you had to smile, right, Ray? Come on, that made you smile a little, right?
It makes me turn vegan.
Oh, that's a lie. The lie detector has determined that's a lie.
Let me tell you right now, there's no way this man's eating salad for the rest of his life. You're right about that. So the best prime rib I ever picked up is when Butcher Boy was running his butcher shop on Ocean, which is crazy. If this shop were still open, Butch, you realize we'd almost be neighbors. I live right by where it is. Now you said get me over to Guerra's for my meat, which is awesome. I met the man who trained you in the art of butchery.
Oh, yeah.
Danny. Who, can I ask, here's my Butcher Boy question. If I put a skinned cow in front of you, could you take apart the whole cow? Are you that much of a butcher? Could you butcher a whole animal?
Well, these days, you're not going to get an entire carcass. Everything's sectioned out. That's the way every meat company's getting it these days. Could I? Absolutely. I mean, absolutely, I could. Wouldn't want to be totally honest with you. Yeah, I mean, you'd want it in quarters or you'd want it in some sort of sections. That's how most places are getting it. But I'd say this, lamb is still delivered that way. Most places that have a full butcher shop, like Guerra's, the place you referenced, they're getting an entire lamb, and it's coming in on the rack, and they're using the handsaw to cut that bad boy up. That's my favorite way to do it.
What if you were out in the wilderness and you had to kill something and eat it and cook it? Could you do that? Could you take the innards out and all that?
Well, that's where it gets difficult. I've never really had to. For fish, I can do it. That's easy. But for the animal, you got to turn it upside down. You got to drain it. You got to let all the blood purge, and then you got to skin it and hide it. Yeah.
To dress an animal is a lot different than butchering an animal.
Exactly.
That's a ton. Even butchers don't dress the animal, right? I mean, that's
no.
No.
This should be barbecue edition, boys.
We all know. I know you barbecue. Here's the thing. So I do have a meat question though.
Yeah,
we all know what the money cuts are. We all know what they are. What do, in your opinion, is the best cut of meat at the cheapest price point available?
Well, it used to be tri-tip, but tri-tip is now something that every single company on the West Coast understands real well, and they're charging a premium for it. I still love a good hanger steak. The problem with a hanger steak is nobody has them. You got to go to an old school butcher shop to get a hanger steak, and once they peel that fat layer off there, it oxidizes real quick, meaning like you know when you open a banana or an apple, it goes from the regular color to brown right away. It's called oxidizing. Same thing happens with meat. It turns from red to burgundy to dark brown almost immediately. But I love me a hanger steak. Skirt steak's still good. Flank steak. Ray, you strike me as a flank steak kind of a guy.
Based on what?
I just think you like the gamier stuff. I think you like the flat meats. You look like a flat meat kind of a guy. You like to marinate it. I think the preparation of the meat for you is probably truncated only by the grilling process itself.
I genuinely don't cook. I genuinely don't grill. That's
really
somebody else's department. My job is to hold the plate out.
Okay. So you sit down, you're at a menu, and the menu's got all the steak cuts out. What's your go-to cut of meat, Ray?
Probably a fillet, because I don't have to negotiate fat or bone.
Makes sense.
It's laziness. It's just laziness.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the prime rib, Damon. There's something about a prime rib. I love me a prime rib. I love the fat in there. You got to have the marbleization. I mean, that's probably my go-to, but a bone-in Delmonico or a New York, something like that, I can go with that. There's nothing wrong with that. Got to cut against the grain, though. I got to make sure it's nice and
tender. Totally. That's a secret tri-tip, too. You got to go against the grain.
I will vouch for Butch. He makes a very, very good prime rib.
Hey, he sold me the best prime rib I ever had in my entire life. Made it in my own kitchen. My old apartment on Turk Street. Or no, that was... That was even another apartment back then. Anyway, barbecuing, grilling.
Yes.
It feels like you had some tips ready to go for the kids. What advice do you have for us, Butcher, on this 4th of July barbecuing holiday?
The key is patience. It's the one thing I have none of. You got to be patient on that grill. You got to go slow and low, all right? All day process. And if you really want to be good, smoke that bad boy the day before. I mean it. Smoke that bad boy the day before. The process is you don't want to play with your meat, meaning so many people I see, they grab the tongs, they're flipping the meat. Let that thing sit there for a little while. And you got to prepare ahead. You can't just show up to a barbecue, slap on a frozen cold Chateaubriand that's 6 inches thick and think that thing's going to grill. Yeah, the outside's going to turn charbroil. You got to let it sit out and get room tempy. I mean, Damon, it's all in the room tempy, and you got to season that bad boy well. Don't smother barbecue sauce on my grill. This isn't, you know, the LBC summertime, all right? Get your barbecue sauce off to the side. I want that steak or whatever that piece of meat is to be seasoned. You can use a dab of barbecue sauce after the fact, but all the sugar in the barbecue sauce is going to rise those flames up and just totally burn that bad boy. Got to be patient.
If you looking, you ain't cooking. Stop picking up the damn barbecue lid.
Thank you.
Indirect heat, quit picking up the lid. The best barbecue I've ever done, and I don't have a smoker. I do all my barbecuing on my Weber, indirect heat, And I know that that's still the bunny slope of smoking. People are like, what about the Traeger, man? What about the Traeger? See, here's the deal. To me, grilling is all about the fiddling, the knobbing, the fiddling,
yes.
Monitoring it, drinking beer all day, having to check it, recheck
exactly.
it, recheck it, recheck it, recheck it, recheck it. Don't open the lid, though. But that's the problem with I know that the Traeger gets awesome, awesome results. Like, no one who's a serious barbecue person isn't impressed with the results. But to me, grilling can never be set it and forget it. Because I won't be satisfied. Unlike Ray, I am a griller. I love tinkering on the fireplace.
Here's the key, though, for me. And this is what I do with any. If I have a big, giant cut of meat that I know is going to take a long time, something like a tri-tip, for example, or a Chateaubriand, which is like a double-thick sirloin, I'm going to slap a bunch of sausage around it. And usually I like the smoked sausage because it cooks quicker. You know, you're going to finish that bad boy off. And then you put the smoked sausage out. You cut that into little dices, stick out the toothpicks, and you got to have your mustard out there. I mean, Damon, you got to have the sausage around the meat. Am I wrong here? Or when you're doing the all-day cook fest, you got to have the appetizers. You can't just – because then you get too antsy and you reach for the meat and people want you to slice off a piece. No, that's when you hit them with the tongs and you say, back up. I'm bringing the sausage to you.
Question is are you a rookie if you only do burgers and dogs at your barbecue? If you're only doing burgers and dogs, you're not barbecuing. You're grilling. There's a yes. big difference between grilling and barbecuing.
Yes, and Damon, I've seen a lot of interesting ways of doing burgers these days. Ray, have you seen this? Putting garlic or onion into your ground beef patty and then making the nice little patty and then throwing it on the grill. Are you an onion inside the burger kind of a guy?
I am not.
Have you ever heard of the – there's a burger I think associated with Minnesota more than any other place. It's called the Juicy Lucy, and they put the cheese on the inside of the burger and then you eat it and it explodes and you burn yourself and third-degree burns, and it's a lot of fun. It's a burger you can really hurt yourself with. When we come on back, Mike Yastrzemski is going to join us. We're going to talk to him about how it's been a weird year, and is it about to be a weird year going forward? That's around the corner here on 95.7.
Doing well. Thanks for having me, guys.
It's good to have you here. Let me start with a personal thanks. Back in another world, another lifetime, in February, when we were getting together to do things like charity events, you, several Giants, came out to support the Guardsmen. You were wonderful at the sports auction. I got to meet you. My wife and I spoke to you and your wife for a little while. You couldn't have been a nicer guy. Thank you so much for coming on out and supporting an important local charity. That really meant a lot to us. You didn't have to do it being so new in the city, but there you were. Thanks so much, man.
Absolutely. I had a great time at that event, and they're a first-class organization and put on a wonderful event, so we had a blast meeting you guys there too.
Thank you. It was really good to have you. That is normally the weekend where players gather in San Francisco and then go on to Scottsdale, and that's exactly what you did, but you weren't in Scottsdale very long, obviously. What have the subsequent weeks been like for you, Mike?
They've been hit and miss, you know, because we were very unsure of what was going on. So those are the times where you got to kind of do your own work in private and, you know, trust that what you're doing is the right thing for the process.
But not knowing that is probably a little unsettling, given the fact that your entire career and the entire careers of everybody around you have always had that sort of 6-week structure before a season starts, where you can not only get your work in, but get your work in with other people with whom you can bounce ideas off of. And now you're getting your work in probably largely by yourself. How disorienting is that?
It's kind of tough, but one of the best things is that the Giants do a great job of checking in on you. They would get on Zoom calls once a week, and you could call the hitting coaches or anybody you really needed to. So that open line of communication was huge for us. And that was really, honestly, reassuring in a time where you don't know what's going on. So continuing communication and trying to plan those next steps and making sure that your workouts are all set and they can get as much swings and as much throwing in as possible.
Mike, to that effect, I'm curious because we've seen some of the setups for the NBA guys that are high profile. Where are you getting this work in, if you don't mind me asking? Like, who are you working with? Where are you getting the work in during this time right now?
Yeah, I was really lucky enough because my roommate in spring training was actually a guy with the Reds, Kurt Casale. And so we kind of started our quarantine together, and he lived in Nashville. And we had a little high school that the two of us could go down to since we knew we'd been around each other so much. So we had just the two of us, and we'd go hit BP. And then eventually we got some pitchers to throw to us and kind of kept our distance. So it worked out really nicely, fortunately, for me.
Do you still call Nashville your off-season home? I know you're a Vandy guy.
I do, yeah. We're living in Nashville now, and obviously we're back in the Bay Area with everything starting to get going again. But Nashville's been a great city for me, and ever since I went there for college, I've definitely called it home.
Did you know that since Missouri and Texas A&M have joined the SEC, Vanderbilt no longer has the worst in-conference football record? Arkansas is now the caboose of the SEC. Congratulations to Commodores everywhere.
Yeah, we'll take every little step that we can. And in that sense, we're really looking to improve. And I think they're starting to build a really good program, and the school's committed to it. So it's been fun to follow.
There you go. Go Vandy. What are you expecting to hop into when you hop into Oracle Park tomorrow to restart spring training? Like, what's the first thing you do? You a little long toss to loosen up the arm? You going to hop in the cage first? What's the first thing Yastrzemski does walking in?
Say hi to everyone from a distance.
Fair enough.
I think that's the most important thing, especially with 60 games. You know, getting some good team camaraderie and making sure that everybody is on the same page and abiding by the rules, making sure that we're staying safe. So once we can kind of clear all that, then we'll be on our way.
Ignoring the safety protocols that are going to be all around you, baseball has always been a sport in which you could sort of build up to your true pace. In a 60-game season where that's not possible, how do you maintain sort of an equilibrium day to day? Because basically you're going to get 63% fewer at bats, 63% fewer times in the outfield, that every game suddenly has an importance that's 1.5 times what it used to be. How do you manage to sort of maintain the equilibrium that you've always been taught to have in a season where basically if you get off to a slow start, you're done?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like September baseball all the way around. We were in a really good chance in August and September to play really meaningful games. So I think we have a good core group that's kind of used to that. And the second part to that is we have a ton of guys that went to college. You know, even though we may have guys that have been out of college for a while, we all know what it's like to play a 58-game season. So I think having that experience is going to be really beneficial. And so that's one of those things that you're going to kind of lean on your past experiences and try and get an advantage from that.
Mike, I'm curious. Last year, you played a lot of corner outfield for this team, and you played it very well. What's the idea this year? Are you going to play a little center, or are you going to be maybe back to right and left field?
I honestly have no idea. I've been telling Cap from day one and Farhan as well that I'm comfortable playing wherever they feel that it is best for the team. I just want to be in the lineup as much as possible and trying to impact the game however I can, whether it's left, center, or right.
Designated hitter, Mike Yastrzemski. I think I just threw up in my mouth a little.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that one will fall on me, even though we have the option. We've got a ton of guys that have some heavy bats, so I think we'll find a way to get those guys into the lineup.
Yeah, you had just about as heavy a bat in that lineup last year, no doubt. Mike Yastrzemski in his second season with the Giants, you know, Gabe Kapler coming into his first season. All sorts of big shoes to fill, obviously, with Bruce Bochy exiting stage left. But how difficult is it going to be to establish, a culture in 60 games for a first year in the dugout with the Giants, Gabe Kapler? I mean, it was going to be tough just stepping in no matter what. This makes it even tougher, doesn't it?
I think it does, but Cap did a really good job before he even got us to spring training. You know, he was traveling around to meet guys and have lunch with people, and he's huge on creating a relationship, and we've already started that and continued it over Zooms and phone calls. And I think that his willingness to put himself in the trenches is going to be what's going to get guys to really, really buy into him and how hard he works himself where it's hard to be someone who doesn't work as hard as your manager.
How, this is a ridiculous question to ask, but I'm just the girl to do it. How much do you not know about Gabe Kapler as a manager that you would have learned if you'd had a full spring training and a regular, I mean, how far sort of behind that curve is he with the players and the players with him?
I would say he's actually ahead of the curve. Like I was saying, because he'd been working his tail off to travel the country to see us. And when you have somebody who's willing to put in that amount of effort into you as a person, then you can't help but give them your best. And when that happens and you get a full group working in the same direction, you never know what the outcome can be.
Mike, I've been watching Giants baseball for 35 years, and I got to admit, last year was pretty not good, you know what I mean, on a variety of levels. But what happened in September with you going to Boston was a Disney moment. I mean, it really was. Are you sick of the Fenway talk of you hitting the home run, getting the standing ovation from the Boston crowd? I mean, that because I'm being real, that was one of the cooler moments last year as a Giants fan.
Yeah, you know, I don't think you can ever get tired of those really, really strong emotional moments. That's kind of why you play the game, is because as a kid, we all wanted to play in our hometown and hit a home run in front of our families. And that's kind of the pinnacle of the sport, obviously, unless you can be doing it in the World Series. But the memories that I feel like were created with my family there and my wife and my mom and in-laws on the field, and, you know, my grandmother was there, got to catch the first pitch with my grandfather. Those things are moments that I will never forget. And lucky that we have technology to have video proof of it.
Let me tell you, you proved yourself very patient, not only at the plate at times, but with all the questions you got with Mo Vaughn being your grandfather and all. It must have gotten very, very disturbing, you know.
No, it's great. That's part of the territory with the name. You know, everybody's got different responsibilities that they hold, and I'm fortunate to be in the family that I'm in, so I just embraced it.
Well, very patient with the same question coming at you 700 times in a weekend, that's for sure. Mike Yastrzemski here on 95.7 The Game. So when you walk into the ballpark, you're going to be playing without a single fan sitting in the seats. I guess there's going to be some cardboard cutouts staring back at you. What's going to be odder, no eyeballs or no sound coming from the stands?
I think it'll be no sound, but it's one of those things where this is probably going to be one of the coolest times in the history of baseball, because it's going to be like the Sandlot. It's just a bunch of guys that love playing the game, and we're all out there trying to put on a show for people that can watch at home. But it's really going to come down to, you know, who wants to play baseball. And you're going to really see who loves the game and who doesn't, I think.
How good are you at watching your language when you're just playing?
that's part of where I like the sound. I'm definitely a self-talk guy, so we'll see. I think I'll be more cognizant of it this time.
Are you a big spitter? Are you a seeds guy? Because I know, like they're saying, don't spit, no seeds, no licking the fingers for pitchers.
Yeah, I am a big seeds guy. So that's going to be a little bit of a change. I know we're allowed to chew gum, so I think I'm going to have to make a little transition.
Do you go just salt seeds, or do you go ranch, Tabasco? Are you a David's guy? What seeds are you? What's your choice seed?
I'm usually what's available, but I'm a big Spitz cracked pepper guy.
Spitz cracked pepper.
Throw away out of the park on that one, but that is my favorite.
You got to stay hydrated with those ones, though, unfortunately, because they just get you real, real sodium mouth, as I like to call it. Mike, did you watch the junior doc? Did you watch the 1998 doc at all? Because, man, I got to be honest with you. Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, Ken Griffey Jr., those were the guys from my childhood. Were any of those guys your guy in the backyard? Were you ever emulating Jr. or Sosa or McGwire?
I was always emulating Junior. That was kind of like, that was so nostalgic for me, because I remember in 99 was when they had the All-Star game at Fenway. Yeah. And I was fortunate enough to go to the Home Run Derby and watch the All-Star game. And when they were hitting balls over the light tower, it was like, you couldn't believe it. And the buzz that was going around the ballpark at that time was so fun, just to be in the seats at one of those games was so exciting, and I got to relive that again. And so that was so cool, and I thought ESPN did a great job with that.
And, of course, your grandfather was there, Ted Williams, with your other grandfather, Tony Gwynn. All your grandfathers were there that day.
My whole family was there.
Did you and your grandfather talk much during the period when there were no games? I mean, because he was, you know, he endured his share of lockouts too. Was he of any kind of resource in helping you sort of understand not just the issues as presented, but the undercurrent thereof? And more to the point, was he able to sort of allow you to keep patient through all the waiting and the, we're not playing, oh, maybe we are, oh, we're playing 80 games, no, you're playing 40. I mean, was he of any kind of resource in getting you through that period?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, he's taken a more of a listening approach with me instead of a speaking approach. So he doesn't just call and give me advice. It's more or less he's there as an ear. If I had any complaints or anything like that, you know, he would be there. But mostly when he would call, it was for updates. He was just curious on when we were going to start, what I'd really been doing. He told me to stop playing as much golf as I was. but it was good.
Did you learn that being a player rep is more of a pain in the ass than it seems?
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that stuck out to me a lot, was seeing how hard it is to actually go through that process, because everybody has their own individual opinions, and there's, you know, 1,200 of them for every team. And it is tough to sit through those situations when all we really wanted to be doing was be back on the field, but our health and safety comes first.
Was the level of frustration that we were seeing from both sides as real as it seemed, or was that a whole bunch of PR public warfare, and it is actually a little bit more, there was more decorum behind the scenes the whole time? It felt like war.
You know, it felt like that at times, and I think those are the things that, in a time of pandemic where everybody needs to understand that there's a bigger picture going on, and we all just need to take the proper steps to be, you know, part of our communities and help out where we need to. And that was one of the things that I felt like I was able to do a little more in Nashville, was to be safe and to be doing my part to make sure that we can do what we can to get rid of this virus.
Mike, we really thank you for joining us, man. This was an awesome conversation. You're as good a guy today as you were that night at the Guardsman Sports Auction. Thank you so much for being so candid. I want to wrap up with this. What's a good season for Mike Yastrzemski? In a year where no normal numbers can be attached to it, what would make you think that 2020 was a good year for you? Not your team, you personally.
You know what? Finding a way to impact this city positively. You know, if one person smiles or kind of forgets about what's going on in the world today to just sit down and watch a baseball game, then I think I did my part, and then I was successful. Bringing a little peace and happiness and a little sense of normalcy would be a success for me.
It's a great answer, man. Thank you so much. We're sure that you're going to get on your way to putting some smiles on faces if we indeed do have this season. Our fingers are crossed. For you and all your teammates, man, health, success, and have a good one. Thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you, guys. It's always a pleasure.
Awesome, awesome conversation with Mike Yastrzemski. Thanks so much to him for joining us today. And thanks to all of you. Thanks to Ray, as always, and Butcher Boy today. Thanks to him for filling in for Kolsky over the last couple of days. It's been great. We want to thank Peter Burns for joining us, Susan Slesser, all of you. It was really, really good week. Too bad it's a short one, because we actually we're on a little bit of a roll here. Today was a fun show. Have a great weekend. Have a safe weekend. Make good choices, everyone. Make good choices. Awesome job out of Nash. Awesome job out of Lucas. It was great to be with you. We'll be back on Monday. Again, make good choices. Take care of one another. Thank you so much for listening, and please do remember, sports don't build character. They reveal it.
And like that, he's gone.
Gone. T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.